Good morning. It's lovely to be with you here in First Macrofelt. Lovely to renew friendship with Jonathan and Lorna, who are dear friends of ours. And it's lovely to be here at the invitation of your PW. Thank you very much for the invitation to come along and to share a wee bit about the work in Ballysally. Could I just ask you if you've heard of Ballysally? You have? Any of you seen the TV programme, The Estate? Yeah, one or two, okay. We're hoping to see a wee bit of the estate here. Jonathan's working feverishly at the... there it is, as if by magic. Many of you will have seen the programme, some not, but it was a fairly... what can I say about it? My Big Fat Gypsy Ballysally Wedding docu-soap, I think, would kind of cover the kind of genre of TV programme. It certainly had a cast of colourful characters. There was... Bobby the dog and his owner Martin. You'll see them in Coleraine from time to time if you're in the town. There were the Dockertys, who had a little disabled girl, and I talked a wee bit about their experience in dealing with that. There was Kyle, a young fella who struggled with alcohol addiction and other issues. And of course, Kellyanne, the truculent teenager, who made a big impact on lots of people, and her mum Louise and the rest of the family. A cast of colourful characters, a programme which intended or proclaimed that it would give you an insight into the life of the community of Ballysally. Rather than me telling you how awful I thought the TV programme was, I'm going to tell you a wee bit instead about Ballysally as we have experienced it, and a wee bit about the congregation of Ballysally Presbyterian Church. Ballysally Housing Estate is 35th worst out of 500 electoral wards in Northern Ireland for multiple social deprivation. So if you want to be top of the chart, that's the wrong chart to be top of. 35th worst out of 500 wards in Northern Ireland for multiple social deprivation. There are severe problems with alcohol and drug abuse. We don't have a hard drugs problem at the moment, but there's certainly quite a growing in use of soft drugs. For many years now, there's been low educational attainment in the community. There have been serious ongoing problems with unemployment, with family breakdown. Paramilitarism has been a big problem in the life of the estate. There have been quite a number of people on the estate murdered at various stages through the trouble, some of those political murders, and others drink-related or other kinds of disputes. Now, the programme painted a very dark picture of Ballysally, which contained a lot that's true, but was very unrepresentative. Not even half the story. Lots of the key stakeholders in the community didn't take part in the programme. The church didn't take part. The local primary school, which is an excellent primary school, didn't take part. Another local community centre, which does a really good job, didn't take part. So it was a very skewed programme, and those key stakeholders didn't take part because they had a clear idea of what kind of programme was being made, and we didn't want to be a part of a programme that was only interested in showing the worst, which was only interested, in our opinion, in exploiting vulnerable people. So instead of focusing on the programme, I want to share a wee bit about the work that we have been involved in Ballysally. Right in the heart of the estate, we're getting the hang of the remote, is the little church building. It's a typical 70s building, not a work of great aesthetic beauty, very functional. You're getting an idea of what it looks like. It's a congregation with a good mix of people. They're not all beautiful girls, but we have a few beautiful girls. Any single men here, take note. A good mix across the age range, a good mix in terms of representation from the local community. Lots of kids involved in the wider life of the church, and plenty of teenagers involved in the wider life of the church. Wonder what your image of church is. I hope it's not that. I hope it's not the circled wagons. Few of us would want that to be the image of our church, and yet in many cases that represents the reality For many people, we feel under pressure. We feel that we're not connecting as well as we used to with the wider society. We feel that many people are not interested in our message, that many people looking on think we're a wee bit odd on the outskirts of the wider society. And almost without thinking, we've developed a circle the wagons kind of mentality, where we look after ourselves, where we take shelter, where we look out for one another. We don't engage particularly with those outside. We just design programs to make sure that our children are well looked after and kept safe, and that we are enabled to do the things that we enjoy doing. That's not a biblical picture of the church. Jesus said of his people, "You're like a city on a hill. You're like light in the darkness." Wonder, can you trace the outline there? That's a satellite or an aerial photograph of a part of the world. Anybody see the outline? That's actually the UK and Ireland. The bigger mass on the bottom end of the picture is the UK, and the lights at the top are Ireland. There's Dublin in the middle and Belfast up at the top. Do you see that? Light in the darkness. A city on a hill. They're images of God's people according to Jesus, according to the scriptures. When we came to Ballysally, Ballysally was a wee bit like the circled wagons. We were a small congregation, very limited in numbers, about 65 to 70 contributing families, one of the smallest for a single charge in our denomination. We're very limited in terms of finances. The area is an area of multiple social deprivation, so there's not a lot of money around. A small congregation in an area of huge needs in terms of poverty and family breakdown and paramilitarism, all the things I talked about before. Very small, very limited, in a context of huge need. And in that context, Jesus calling us to be a light in the darkness, to make a difference, to enable God to be seen as we follow in the footsteps of our Master. We went through a period of prayerful consideration. What is God calling us to do? How is God calling us to respond to our estate? How is God calling us to be a light in our community? And some verses from Revelation chapter 3 became very important to us. We were convinced that God had opened a door for us, a door that no one could shut. There was a recognition, we believed, on God's part that we were small and limited, had little strength, and yet were called to be witnesses, called to proclaim his name, to make sure that we didn't deny the truth by hiding behind our fears and our problems and our limitations. This verse became very important to us. God has opened an opportunity for us, and he calls us to respond to the opportunity. He doesn't call us to be what we're not. He calls us to be true to who we are. He doesn't call us to talk about all of the things that we would do if only we had more people, if only we had more money. He calls us to be faithful with the people we have and the resources that he has given to us. And so we sought to try and respond honestly and with faith and with hard work. And four things became important to us as we thought about how we might do that. There were four key ideas which God impressed upon us as over a period of months we prayed about this and talked about it and thought about it and read about it and kind of entered into a mix of discussion. We believe that God was calling us to be intentional in our work, to be balanced in our witness, to be flexible in our witness, and to be patient in our witness. And the first thing he's calling us to do is to be intentional, deliberate, purposeful, calculated planning, keeping the main thing the main thing. I don't know if you recognize that boy in the picture. You would hardly believe that it's me, but it is. Dark hair and a thin waist. Must have been at least 2 years ago, maybe, when that picture was taken. We were called to be very deliberate about our gospel proclamation. God called us to preach the gospel. And we do preach the gospel faithfully, even with grey hair and a bigger waist. We continue to preach the gospel faithfully. And yet we recognize that the vast majority of people in our community, as in most communities now, no longer come to church. They no longer hear the preaching of the gospel. And so on a Sunday evening, we put the pulpit away. We don't put the gospel away. We put the pulpit away, which is handy for us because it's a multi-purpose building. I'm not suggesting that you do that for a second. But in our context, it's a very useful image of the attitude that we were required to have. To recognize that we were called to be a faithful gospel witness, called to declare the good news about Jesus, and called to declare it to people who didn't hear it, who weren't immediately in the church context. And so we're required to do whatever we have to do to get the gospel to the people who need to hear it, to bring that good news to people whose lives are dark and dismal and dreary, that we might cheer them up with the hope of the gospel, cheer them up with the good news that Jesus loves them. So we don't put the gospel away, but we look for ways to get the gospel out of the church to where the people are at. And we're very conscious that we need to be intentional about that. No farmer goes about his business doing a wee bit of this and a wee bit of that and hoping for a good crop. He sits down and he plans and he thinks. And he follows a program of work that will bring about the desired outcome. And we in the church are seeking to do the same kind of thing. Not to do a wee bit of this and a wee bit of that, but to consciously, deliberately choose to get the gospel into the hearts and lives of people. To figure out ways in which that would be possible. To look at things that we're doing to see if they work. To recognize things that we're doing that no longer work. That maybe were brilliant at one stage, but no longer cut the mustard. And so we've sought to be not emulating Baywatch, but getting in among the people. This is Johnny Dewey, one of our youth workers. Because we're in a neighbourhood renewal area, there's some government funding available. And we set up a youth and community project. And with that funding, we employed a number of workers. We employed Johnny. I'm struggling a wee bit with this remote. There we go. That's not the local leader of the Women's UDA. That's our other youth worker, Julianne Crummy. And she's not encouraging people into church. She's playing baseball. So we've employed a couple of youth workers and a pastoral worker. Who enable us to have a connection with our community, to go out and engage with the real needs of our community, and through that engagement, to bring people into contact with the good news about Jesus, and also to enable them to see the deeds of Jesus in action. Now, I recognize that not every congregation can do that. In one sense, the difficult situation that we're in opens up an opportunity for government funding, which allows us to employ these workers. But here I'm not illustrating the workers, I'm illustrating the mindset that's necessary. To think about our context, to think about the resources we have, to think about how we might multiply those resources and use them to best effect. To be intentional. And through our youth and community project, we've sought to engage with our wider community. We have lots of clubs and lots of activities for children and for young people. We have an aspect of our community project which promotes a healthy living message. The government are very keen to do that and keen to fund that. And we believe that the gospel message is for the whole person, that God is interested in whole people, not just their souls, not interested just in a spiritual dimension. He's interested in the whole person. And so we're seeking to be intentional about a word and deed ministry. First thing is intentionality. Second thing is word and deed balanced ministry. Because God is interested in people, not just souls. And so we share good news with people. And we share positive health messages with people. And we listen to people who are struggling in their lives. And we seek to bless them for Jesus' sake. Because we're walking in the steps of Jesus. We're following Jesus' model of ministry. Jesus, who went out and preached the content of the gospel and went out and actually brought healing into the lives of people. That's what we're seeking to do as we're resourced to do it. And so we brought a local dentist in and he's teaching the children about how to look after your teeth. And along with that message, we're telling them that God loves their teeth and loves them and wants what's best for them. We've been working with young people. We have an interesting program at the minute where our youth workers target young people who are struggling in school, young people who are at danger of suspension or exclusion. And we have many young people with all kinds of problems and difficulties in their lives who are struggling to connect at school. It's not simply that they're badly behaved, Many of them are coming from homes where there's severe alcohol abuse, where there's been marital breakdown, where there's been domestic violence, and a whole range of context that needs to be taken into account. We're not making excuse for sin, but we're recognising that many lives are broken and messed up. And so we want to come alongside young people, and we want to support them and encourage them and help them to do the best they can in school, to get the best education that they can. And the youth workers would mediate between the young people and their families, the young people and the schools, between the schools and the families, and where the police are involved, bringing the police into the context as well. Our purpose is to stand alongside people, to help them, to support them, to encourage them, to lift their horizons, to help them to want more in their lives. We probably have about 50 young people from the estate coming into our youth club on a Friday night, 50 or 60 maybe coming in on a Sunday night to our discussion-based program. And we do a lot of one-to-one work with the young people, where we go into the family homes, or we take the kids off to McDonald's, or we go to a room in the church, and be a listening ear. Suggest alternatives and different ways of looking at things, different ways of experiencing things. To try and take the kids out of the estate. For many of our kids, their life is Ballysally Estate. And we want them to see beyond that, to raise their horizons. So we're down to the White Rocks. That was the one day this year when the sun shone in Portrush, and we just happened to get a picture of it. There it is. Lots of kids just having fun. And in the context of fun and support, relationships grow. They get to know what we're like. We get to know what they're like. They get to see a genuine Christian. And so their understanding of God and what it means to follow him is shaped by a real experience with real Christians, and not shaped by Dot Cotton on EastEnders or the other kind of loopy people who appear as Christians in modern dramas. We want to bring people into contact with real Christians so they can see the real thing, so that the gospel message is illustrated, it's fleshed out in their experience. When we take them down to the beach, we play volleyball and we go and throw everybody in the sea, and we have burgers, very few of which have horse meat in them. And then we take the opportunity to share the good news as well. We don't force that on anybody. It's just a natural thing. It's part of who we are, and they see it in us. We're not making them do it. But because they got to know us, because they respond to the kindness they've received, they're willing to give us a hearing. And we take that opportunity. That's Thomas. Please don't try this at home. He's been trained in fire breathing, and he uses that as the introduction to his testimony. I don't know if you've ever sat in front of a group of 50 teenagers and tried to capture their attention. That's definitely a way that works. But be careful if you're going to try it. We've tried to bring other people in from outside. We've developed links with churches in the Czech Republic, with churches in the Republic of Ireland, and with churches in the United States. And we try and bring people in whose context is different, but who share the same love of Jesus and have the same gospel message. It gives our young people the opportunity to see beyond Ballysally, to see into other people's lives, to see what's possible, to remember that they're not restricted to what they see every day. You women know that the weight of a man's heart is through his stomach. We men know that the weight of a man's heart is through football. And this is a common language. And so we've sought to develop a football ministry. So every year we bring a group called Ambassadors in Sport. They come in from Portadown. And they do coaching sessions during the day with the children in primary school. They have an afternoon coaching session with some of the teenagers. And then in the evening, we play football matches against other churches or against local football teams. And we try to engage the older young fellas and the men in this. And I even got the boots off the shelf myself, and I dusted the cobwebs off them, and I had a wee go myself. And the purpose is not so that people become brilliant footballers. It's to use that opportunity to create relationship, to develop relationship, to help people see how a Christian responds in difficult situations. We family days out, and we have fun days where we get the big plastic sheet. We banish the health and safety men, and we get the plastic sheet and the fairy liquid in, and we do a wee bit of slipping and sliding up and down that big slide. We have a homework club, which again targets that poor educational attainment. And we show that we're wanting to encourage children, we're wanting to support them, give them the best that we can. And we bring some students from the Christian Union in Coleraine into the church, and we don't do the homeworks. The kids would love us to do the homework for them, but we help them with their homework. We listen to them reading, we do their tables with them, and we do their spellings with them. We give them time and attention that they sometimes don't get at home. Give them a wee bit of encouragement that they sometimes don't get at home, because their mums and their grandparents didn't really do very well in school either and don't have a positive image of school. And we give them role models, young teenagers who have gone through the school system, who are at university, for whom the world is beginning to open up. And we provide them with a role model. We also work among the pensioners in the estate, and we recognise that many pensioners are living in the estate, are a wee bit isolated, live perhaps at times with the fear of crime, and so we try to we do a visiting programme with the pensioners, get in there, see them in their homes, provide a Christmas dinner and a monthly meeting for pensioners. It's all designed to try and engage with people, to reach into the community, to love our community, to bless our community in Jesus' name, and to bring good news into the middle of our community. Not forcing it on people, but having earned a hearing, having gained people's respect, having broken down the barriers of suspicion that are often there, and there for good reason, because many people have been used and abused by the church in the past. But trying to do what we can to create an opening for the gospel, trying to do what we can to put flesh and bones on the gospel message, to try and do what we can to show people what God is like. In that verse that we read from Matthew's gospel, those verses, it said, "You're a light, you're the light of the world. A city on a hill cannot be hidden. Neither do people light a lamp and put it under a bowl. Instead, with intentionality, they put it on a stand, and it gives light to everyone in the house. In the same way, let your light shine before men, that they might see your good deeds and glorify you." No, that they might see your good deeds and praise your Father in heaven. It's about helping people to see God, helping people to understand this message that is very counterintuitive, that God loves you even though you're a sinner, that God has patience with you even though you presume on his goodness. We have an activity called Street Reach. We have this in the Easter week, and it's a clean-up operation. We bring children, young people, and adults from the community together on 3 days, and we go out into the estate of Ballysally, and we clean it up as best we're able. We brush up the streets. We take litter away. We paint people's fences. We cut grass where there's some areas that are overgrown. We go in and help some pensioners get their gardens in order, take a few wee plants out and brighten up the garden. It's a great opportunity for children and young people to learn a wee bit of responsibility and have a blast at the same time. It's a great opportunity for adults to get involved in the life of the community and do something not just for themselves, but for the wider community. It's an opportunity for them to take a wee bit of wholesome pride in their own community, in a community that's known for all the wrong reasons. It gives people an opportunity to fly in the face of that, to show that that's not representative, that's not their all there is to Ballysally. So we're intentional. We think about how we're going to do our work. We think about how we can do it to best effect. We're balanced. It's about sharing the good news of Jesus Christ, the story of the gospel, but fleshing that out with deeds, kindness and generosity for God's sake and not for our own. I'll tell you one story. This is Alan, who was refereeing the match. And at one stage, there was a wee bit of bad language in the match, and Alan decided that he was going to send off one of the culprits who just happened to be the local head of the UDA. It was a tense moment for me. I was beginning to make my way onto the pitch to escort him off. When the guy, okay, listened to the referee, and he turned and began to walk for the sideline. He took the authority from the referee and began to walk off. Then he stopped, and I could see the wheels beginning to turn, and he was beginning to think about his image. He was beginning to think about what people were thinking. He was about to turn back when I called, "Lee, come on, off you come." And he came off. and everybody breathed a sigh of relief, and the match went on. Lee was playing in another match later on in the week, and one of the ambassadors in sport, a lovely young Christian fella, was making an idiot of him, as we say. Every time Lee got the ball, Stuart took it off him. Every time there was a heading challenge, Stuart won the heading challenge. At one stage, the ball bounced up just in front of Stuart, and he was going to chest it down when Lee came in and drop-kicked him in the chest. The crowd paused, held their breath to see what was going to happen. Was Stuart going to get up and cause a fight? Was Lee going to jump on him and finish him off? What was going to happen? And Stuart stood up and turned around and walked away. Some people thought he was afraid, and that's why he walked away. The next time Lee got the ball, Stuart did exactly the same thing again. Jumped in, took the ball off him. The next time there was a heading challenge, Stuart jumped up and outheaded him. And at the end of the match, shook his hand and walked off. The crowd was buzzing with conversation about that incident. For weeks, people talked about how the Christian fella stood up and walked away, but wasn't afraid. And at the end of the week, when the ambassadors were there, Lee came into the church, sought Stuart out, and apologized to him. "I'm sorry, I was out of order. I shouldn't have done that." And shook his hand and said, "Nothing like that will happen again." Simple incident in a football match that echoed throughout the community for weeks afterwards. We'd been talking about God's forgiveness, God's love and mercy. We've been talking about how God transforms people. And everybody who was watching that day saw exactly what we were talking about. We're almost finished. I know my time's going. That's one of the problems when I start to talk, I forget to finish. We some lively characters. I'll not tell you who, but one of the guys, having done time for armed robbery, is a regular attender. A man who's out on release, a lifer guilty of murder, attending regularly. Michael, I'll tell you about him in a wee minute. So a minister came to a new church, and he's getting to know the church, getting to know the people, and everything seemed to be in order except the Sunday school. Sunday school started at 2:10, and he thought that was a very odd thing. And so he asked the elders, "How come the Sunday school starts at 2:10? And nobody knew, and he asked among the committee, nobody knew why the Sunday school started at 2:10. Finally, he went to the senior elder, an old elder who had dropped out of the normal duties of the eldership, was still respected and loved. But when the minister went to see him, he took the opportunity. "Joe, how come the Sunday school starts at 2:10? "Your Reverence, I know, I'll tell you. When we started the Sunday school, and I remember the day, the children used to come up to the Sunday school on the tram, and the tram arrived up at 2:00, and it took the children 10 minutes to get from the tram station to the Sunday school room. And 40 years after the tram stopped running, the Sunday school was still organised according to the tram timetable." Now, that would be funny if it wasn't so real life in the life of the churches. So many things that had a reason, so many things that served a purpose, so many things that were good have lost their usefulness and purpose. And yet we still do them. We're still bound by them. We're still guided by them. As we look at the life of our church, we need to be flexible. If we're going to be intentional and balanced, we also need to be flexible. Reaching out into the community, doing what works, doing what is true to the gospel, doing what enables us to connect with people. I don't know what time your Sunday school starts at, and I don't want to talk about your Sunday school. I'll tell you about ours. Our Sunday school started at 10:00 on a Sunday morning. And in the days when parents got up and sent their children to Sunday school, we had 120 children coming to Sunday school. But as society changed, Sunday school stayed the same. Parents no longer committed to sending their children to Sunday school. Didn't get up, and their kids didn't come. And the numbers fell until there were only a very few children coming along. And it was a very dispiriting, discouraging experience, not only for the children, but for the leaders who were involved in it. And we had to have a serious look. If we want to have a children's ministry that's effective in reaching children and sharing the good news, what would be a good time to do it? Well, if we sat out to pick the worst time possible, we would probably come up with 10 o'clock on a Sunday morning. Parents who've been out in the town on a Saturday night, there's no way they're going to be getting up on a Sunday morning. There's no way their children are going to be with us. It's not a useful time for the leaders who are busy and rushed and hurried. It's not a good time in terms of the time available because it's just before the church service is about to start and you have very limited time to work with the children. And so we thought about how can we bless our children? How can we bring the children of the estate into the life of the church? Let's have an Irish Sunday school. Let's have our Sunday school on a Thursday night, and we'll have it at 6:30, when parents are maybe glad to get rid of the children for an hour or an hour and a half. So it gives us a wee bit more time with the children. It's at a more sensible time, and it suits the parents, it suits the children, and it suits the leaders in the church. And we have probably 50 or 60 children coming to our Irish Sunday school compared to 10 in our typically Northern Ireland Sunday school. There's a need to be flexible. Some people thought we were closing the Sunday school. Some people thought we were retreating from the work of the gospel. Some people thought we weren't interested in ministry to children anymore, when all the while we were being intentional and flexible so that we did the best job possible to reach the children. And then finally, we need to be patient, and that's where Michael comes in. Michael was involved in the youth organizations. He wasn't a churchgoer. His family weren't churchgoers, but he came along to the youth organizations. He came for years and years and years. He was always easy to get on with. He always was respectful, a bit of a character at times, but not hard to manage. But he was very self-consciously not a believer in Jesus Christ. Even when his best friend became a Christian, Michael decided it wasn't for him. He was glad for his friend and he wished his friend well, but he didn't want it for himself. And in my thinking, I thought that Michael's time had passed. I thought that Michael had been given every opportunity to hear the gospel and to see the gospel lived out and had chosen deliberately not to respond. And if I'm being honest, in my heart of hearts, I gave up on Michael. And then one day, Johnny, the youth worker, phoned me and said, I've just had a call from Michael. He's phoned me. He's coming around to the house. He wants to become a Christian. And he went to see Johnny, and he gave his life to the Lord. He's now a vibrant young Christian. He's just been married to a lovely wee Christian girl, and he's an active participant in the life of our congregation. The work of sowing is a long work, and we need patience. The work of relationship building takes time, and we need patience. The work of readjusting the life of the congregation to suit the needs of people in a new situation, in a new generation, in a changed society, takes time, and we need patience. We need to be patiently doing the right things, faithfully praying for the people that God brings across our path, and faithfully looking to Him to do the work that only He can do, which is to call people as disciples of His. That's what we're doing in Ballysally. We don't hold it up as any great thing. It's just what we're doing in obedience to what the Lord has called us to do. But what I'd say to you in First Macrofeld is that the framework could be useful for you. You're a long established congregation. There's loads of good things that you've been involved in over the years. Is the main thing still the main thing? Is it still about the gospel? Is it still about reaching out with good news to those whose lives are broken? Are you trying to do that with intentionality, the way a businessman pursues a profit, the way a farmer pursues a crop, the way a teacher seeks to engage with her class? Thinking about what you're doing, looking for the best ways to do what needs to be done, working with all your energy as strategically as you can to accomplish your purpose. Are you balanced? Are you preaching the gospel, sharing the good news? Are you loving the people of this community? Not just talking about it, but practically finding ways to show the love of Jesus to them. Are you flexible? Are you willing to change so that even if you're pushed outside your comfort zone a wee bit, the needs of those in your community are clear before your eyes? And are you willing to be patient? To keep on loving. To keep on sharing. To keep on preaching. To let your light shine before men and women and boys and girls. That they might see your good deeds and not praise you, but praise your Father in heaven. I honestly believe that that's what God is calling his people to do in our day. Will we pray?